Welcome to the Carpcast. Introducing the two biggest nods that don't use chods. They're old, grumpy, and they're pretty opinionated. Here's your host, it's Mark and Jamie.
So hello and welcome to episode 81 of the Carpcast. How are we today, Mark?
I'm relieved because I've actually caught a big fish from Monk's Pit. It was getting a bit embarrassing going down there struggling, and then the Don following us on and smashing it up.
I've had
a fish which turns out to be a 40 down in weight a bit, which we know I like to do that.
Yeah,
he wasn't quite 40, but I'm really not that bothered. A fish called Gill Cluster, which gave me one hell of a fight.
Yeah.
It's like we discussed on the phone, was it yesterday? Using braided mainline. I never want to use braided mainline on a reel that doesn't have a quick drag facility. Because when that fish decided to turn on one of its rampaging runs, you know, massive tail on it, big long fish, you needed to be on it instantly. There's no stretch, no give, you know, and with that quick drag, just like, you know, three or four clicks on the affinity reels I'm using at the minute, I was most of the time I was in full control. Won the day.
Excellent. Was that the only fish that you had?
It was. Do you know what, I had that one screaming run, one big liner, and that was it for my session.
Wow.
You know, there was that lad I mentioned, Tommy's called, who's seen you at poker tournaments. He did a couple of nights, went into a swim. He had a 30 on a single hook bait within 5 minutes of casting out. Then he fished for two nights with nothing.
Wow, just a little window of opportunity. Well, I fished last week on Kevin Nash's. It's we're well into the trips. If you remember, we advertised a little while ago. Took a few weeks off Kevin that he hadn't sold. And Carpcast listeners have been coming, yeah. And we had one pretty quiet week in the summer. But since these weeks have started again, back end of September, it's fished pretty well every week. We had a slow week, but a couple of PBs caught. Robert Orme had a nice PB, 38 Miracle, the Beauty Queen. And then last week, Full Moon Week, last time that lake fished particularly well was New Moon as well, and it fished damn well. I had quite a few. I also had a 40 pound down in weight. It was a PB of some sorts. It was my PB fully scaled. It's called the fish known as the Big Fully in there, usually 40 pound. It was actually 34, but it was also my
34.
My PB Facebook likes by a country mile, and people seem to like that fish.
That sounds really sad and vain.
Yeah, it does. Well, I'm not quite a millennial, but you know.
Well, that's what they like.
They're fishing for likes, yeah. But 600 plus likes, which I've never had on anything close on a picture. But it's ridiculous. It just shows what a fantastic carp it was. And to be honest, both the other lads on the trip, we had William Dawson and Ben Williamson. I'm sure it was Williamson. Sounds wrong now because they're both Williams, but I think it was. But yeah, Ben and William both caught PBs as well. All of us had 40s. I had another 40. And Ben, they both had a 40, and there was a 50 caught as well, which was the 4x4. So yeah, fished pretty well. There was a lot of fish out on zigs. I had like 5 bites one morning on zigs, I think, and it just kept going every time I put it out in one particular area. Just little 2-foot zigs, 18 inches as well. Yeah, I had a few off the bottom, and there's another Carpcast trip going on now as we speak. Roger's actually taken the two guys down because he knows them both from Manchester, and one of them's already had a PB on the first day yesterday. Another fully scaled, as it were. Forget the size of it. It was a good 30, but it was 33, I think. But that was Ray from Dead Man's. That was his PB. So yeah, there's literally every week on one of these Carpcast trips, somebody's had a PB.
You know, if you do these again anytime, you're going to have to rebrand it the Carpcast Kevin Nash Church Lake PB Trips.
Yeah, well, I know the first lake he opened, the first year he opened those lakes to the general public, they've been fished pretty heavily over the last 10 years by the industry people, but the actual general public. And he has a diary inside the lodge there, and he'd obviously got on the lads to go through and see how many PBs were caught that year. And I was flicking through the diary last week, and I didn't look all the way to the end, but they were up to 17 at one point of each week. Obviously they're at PB 12, PB 13, PB, and I saw 17 for sure, which is kind of crazy. Yeah, kind of crazy. But the thing that was stunning was every fish was pristine. I mean, we saw a good sort of 15, 16 fish out last week, and every one was just glossy, shining, brand new, you know, really nice colours. And just shows the testament of what he's done there over the years. Yeah, it's pretty damn fine. I'm just looking at my dog. It's come down, sat next to me. You might hear it at some point. You'll hear it go crazy because I'm expecting an Amazon order if it does come while we are recording this. And I do apologise, but you'll hear the dog go crazy. But the last time
you went... I hope you went back to the early Carpcast links and used the Amazon link we used to put out.
I always forget. I've just spent one on Amazon in the last 48 hours. Yeah, I forgot. But yeah, looking at Louis the Carp Dog, who's a fantastic dog, by the way. But here's a little story for you, especially as you had a minute's silence for my dead cat that was allegedly scraped up off the road by the council. Dog started going crazy 2 days ago. There's a black cat sat at the window. Turns out to be the Messiah returning. The cat turned up again.
Your pussy has been resurrected.
It's 6 months it's been gone, the little shit. 6 months, presumed dead, mourned, grieved, binned all his stuff, all the cat litter trays and bags of food and everything given away, gone. He turned up again.
Yeah, he's got another home.
Of course he has, yeah.
Some old granny who's taking him in and giving him all the fuss and feed that he wants.
I've obviously not even been back for a look in 6 months, though. Like, and don't forget, the council actually said they found two dead cats at the end of our road the day after ours went missing. So, like, we, you know, I spent 3 months thinking maybe we'll see him at the door when we come back in one day, but no, nothing. And he turned up, obviously found that there's a dog in his place. He came straight in, went upstairs to Megan's bedroom where he used to sleep, and went to sleep. Woke up in the morning, I went out, I spent 60 quid in pets at home, flea stuff for him and the dog, just in case he had any fleas on him, because they can transfer from like one to the other. I think they go one way and not the other way. I think dog can get cat's fleas, and but a dog flea can't go on a cat. I think it's that way around. Whichever way it is, anyway, you've got a flea in both if you do one. You've got a flea in both. So I bought all the flea gear, which, as you probably know, is not cheap. New cat litter tray. Our cat will only eat expensive cat food. If you give it any normal food, it shits. It does runny shits everywhere. It gets like diarrhea. I think that must be from when it was run over and had operations, was a rescue cat and stuff. So obviously, when it turned up in the evening, Rachel went up to the local shop, just bought whatever food they had. It shit all over the carpet like an hour later. I was like, we have not missed this cat. So I went out, spent a fortune. As I said, spent 60 quid on everything. The cat went out yesterday afternoon and has not come back again. He's gone again. I've just spent a fortune. So the Messiah returned and then fucked off. I'm not happy.
Came, eat your food, shat on your carpet and left.
Exactly. So yeah, there's an update on Catgate, but if it ever comes back again, I'm not even sure it will. So I don't know, but it was a bit bizarre. Rachel rang me in tears. She was crying. She's like, "The cat's well." Yeah, I was busy, and she was. It was shock. Even when I seen him, I had to look at him. I mean, he's got scars all over him because he was a rescue cat that got run over, and it was a bit surreal looking at him after 6 months.
I bet it was.
It was a bit crazy, and then the little bugger's gone again. I don't know.
Strange things, cats. They certainly low into the cells.
Yes. Well, he's not my favourite thing. Obviously, and he battered the dog. I was a bit worried. Louis being a little Jack Russell sort of terrier, he's crazy. If he sees a squirrel or a cat or anything, he goes mental and chases after it. He was pretty well behaved with the cat. He just wanted to sniff him, but I got him in the same room together, introduced him, and it was the cat that was a bit aggy. And Louis, he wasn't really too bothered about the cat, and then he sort of just wanted a little bit of a sniff. He got a bit too close, and the cat just went whack. Walloped him right in the face. Yeah, it was a right hook. It was a good one. I was expecting to see blood, and it wasn't, but it certainly told the dog, because the dog just ignored him after that, and the cat just turned his back on the dog and started eating his food. And about 10 minutes later, he went, never to return.
Well, you don't know. 6 months' time, you'll have to give a CatCast update on what was your cat called?
Pusscat.
Pusscat. That's very imaginative.
That's what we called him. Yeah, it was. He came from the cat place, being called Byron. I don't know why they called him that, but he only Byron. Yeah, but he only ever responded to Pusscat. So,
yeah. Yeah. Cat names are a bit of an issue between me and my wife at times in here. Mm. We've our oldest cat now called Ash. Mm. We first got two cats. The first two that are no longer with us. She called one Mickey, after Mickey Mouse.
Yeah.
And she says, I can name the other one, so I called it Mallory. So we had Mickey and Mallory. Obviously, that didn't stick, and she changed it to Purdy or something stupid.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then we had a little long-haired thing called Marley, because when we got him, he really needed a brush. It looked like he had dreadlocks, so he had Bob Marley. Which that stuck, though he was an idiot. He did go playing with a bus.
Mm.
And Ash that we've got now, black cat, I suggested the name Ash. I was like, yeah, it's Dark Ash, that's good. Ash is one of my favourite characters. Have you ever seen Evil Dead?
No.
Oh, you need to watch
maybe
it.
Years ago when I was young.
Yeah. Oh, Evil Dead is, the first one, it's, one of the old original, real good, scary horror films. You watch it now, it's probably not so scary, but, and then you get 3, Army of Darkness, where he fights the medieval dead. He goes back in time. It's brilliant. He's had his hand cut off and he's replaced it with his boomstick, which is a gun.
I wanted to name the dog Fishy. Grateful. So I go, here, Fishy, Fishy, here, Fishy.
Oh dear. I grew up with a black Labrador called Deefer.
Yeah,
Deefer dog.
My missus's sister's, one of her dogs called Didier. I've said this before, Didier.
Didier Dogba.
Yeah. send us your off the wall pet names. Give us a laugh.
Let's get this back round to carp fishing. What's the stupidest name for a carp you've heard?
Oh, there's loads, isn't there? Elstow had a few funny ones, didn't it? Elstow one.
My first 40 out of there was the unattended. I wonder how that got its name.
What's the one? Is the one called Fagbot or something like that in one of the places?
What?
I'm sure it's called like Fagbot or something like that.
Not probably.
From Elstow, but somewhere else.
Yeah, I think the best name in Elstow was a fish called Dr. Sex Ambulance.
Yeah, that was a good
quite scaly one. Then you're obviously King of Elstow, which I remember Roger having at £38 in winter. That was a proper capture, that one.
Yeah, in January it was good, in that minute.
Yeah, fish. Captain Trudwick. You had the Slug family, the White Slug and other slugs. You had the Speckles family. There was Fat Speckles, Long Speckles, and whatever else. But do you know one thing? I don't mind fish being named after, like, the description or some sort of story. But it seems to be happening on a lot of these, day ticket waters now, where someone catches a fish and it's a new 30 and you get to name it. And then, I'm going to call this one Audrey after my grandma who died 3 years back. I'm sure your grandma was a lovely woman, but you don't call fish stupid names like that. If I'm ever in that situation, I'm just going to write, this one's called Don't Give Me a Fucking Name.
I've just remembered a good one. I'm sure it's from, was it from Darrenth? No, it wasn't Darrenth. It was one of the Lee Valley picks. Was it Smoked Ham Junkie? Remember that one?
Yes. Yeah. Was it Screamer Baits or something like that? It was always get caught on that. On the same thing, you could have called the fat lady, you know, the rotund Cambridge fish that we shall not mention anymore. That should have been called the Scopex Squid Junkie for the amount of time she sucked that in.
Yeah, I hate to guess how many times that fish was caught on the Scopex Squid, but I bet it's 20 plus.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, between that and also the Monster Pursuit was around still back then. Well, it is again, isn't it?
Yeah, I think you can get the Monster Pursuit again, yeah, with the old school range. Terry Hearn developed that recipe with Nash, I think, if I remember. The Monster Pursuit.
Yeah. I caught a lot of fish on it, and, you know, it's when, if I remember reading this story rightly, you know, it's a you know, piece of marketing, you know, savvy from Mr. Nash. It's when the Yateley complex was first going to open in the close season. He knew there's a lot of fish going to get caught, so he went down there and got all the lads on his bait. Hey presto, he caught all the fish, and I think like I said, Terry Earn and Nigel Sharp were originally on Nash bait from back then.
Yeah, yeah, they were.
Sure, I'll be corrected, but
yes, no, they were. You're all right.
That is seemingly what I remember. Yeah, I remember Terry's capture of Mary was on the Monster Pursuit and the Black Mirror.
Yeah, that is correct.
I've read his chapter in his first book about Colmere several times.
Yes,
he's right.
There was a very large fish caught this week, and as usual, it's from the one of the most infamous controversial lakes in the country, which is the Avenue. Did you see that fish known as Tarka, the big common?
It's on the net in association with catfeed.com, so it's definitely true.
Oh, I did see it, yes. You know, is it 64 pounds?
Yeah, absolutely huge fish. I don't know the exact history of that fish, but I do know the, you know, the story. Well, Rob's told us the story behind most of the fish in the Avenue. You know, he has grown them on. Most of them, a lot of them are English born. He's bred them, whether you get down with the heritage or the stock. But they're certainly stunning carp. I went in the lodge in the Avenue, and it's fantastic. It's all pictures, framed pictures on the walls of all the fish coming up through. As I said, I think I remember Alex Lister, who's now actually left Irish Fisheries. I saw him post the other day. Yeah, he's gone to work for another company. But yeah, he was telling me he'd seen a fish go from £28 to £60 during the time that he was in the 5 years that he was there, which is absolutely crazy growth rates. Just, you know, shows maybe it's your type of fish and maybe it's not, but it shows the growth rates that can be achieved given the right conditions. There is certainly no shortage of people wanting to buy Rob Hales' fish that he's bred. RHFisheries.com is the website you can go to. You can go by the Super Freaks. Many, many fisheries in the country now have a lot of his fish in the lake, and a lot of you that maybe don't get down with it are probably already fishing for him. In certain lakes, I don't know, but what I do know is that he does have some absolutely fantastic lakes, and just a little bit of everything. You've got places like Western Park that are still stunning scaly ones. You can book the boat house as an open access. You can book it for a long weekend or a week, where you get like a proper lodgy type house. It is an old boat house. It's absolutely stunning down there. I mean, all of his lakes are in a stunning area of the country. Hill of Monument, which is a complete day ticket lake. Monument 1, Monument 2, which I really like the system that he operates down there. The fish get a night off every other day, so you book 36-hour sessions on there. Then obviously the fish are left the following night, and then the sessions start again the following morning, and the fish basically get a day's rest every other day. RHFisheries.com, you can book that. You've got the Sitch. The Sitch is an up-and-coming lake. I mean, it's a very old, established lake. It's not one that's been dug or anything. It's a natural lake. It's completely surrounded by a forest, and the stocking there is absolutely fantastic. You can go back and have a listen to sort of bigger details on it. They do have an open access swim, a holiday swim that you can book on the Sitch. But another way of fishing the Sitch, Mark, is you can come and fish it with us. Because we are having a Carpcast social on there in April. Which is before I move abroad, before I move to Slovenia next year. The dates are the 14th of April to the 21st. So we've got it for a week. You're going to be able to book the full 7 days if you would like, or we're going to do a 3-day session and a 4-day session on there, which will be a little bit cheaper. If you are interested, I think there's 14 places available. There's fish to well over £40 to mid 40s. It's an extremely well stocked lake. The fish are stunning. The surroundings are stunning. You can drive around most of the lake and it's just set in a forest basically. And it's a chance to fish one of these fabulous waters with us. We haven't done the Carpcast social for a while, but if you are interested in fishing that, either for 3 days, 4 days, or for the full 7 days, then please do send us a message. I haven't sorted out prices and stuff yet. I need to do some maths on it. But yeah, if you would like to come and fish the Sitch with us on the Carpcast social, we'll have a good old barbecue one night. I'll see if Richard wants to come down and do a barbie. The firedupbarbecues.co.uk. Richard does some fantastic food down there. Yeah, get in touch with us. If you want to check out Rob's other lakes, you can have a look on the website rhfisheries.com. It's got the Acton Burnell, which is Syndicate Lake. Fantastic top and bottom. Go down in history again. I fished those on somebody else's open access trip last spring, and they are beautiful lakes in the grounds of a castle. Fished it with Briggsy down there. Managed to catch a 40-pounder as well. The lakes are stunning. I think the top lakes got 25 40s in or something, and the bottom lakes potentially still got one of the 50s in. There's a lot of old history fish in the bottom lake. Yeah, if you want to find anything out about the carp that are for sale down there or fishing any of the lakes, then rhfisheries.com. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that social on the Sitch, Mark. I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah, sounds good. You just mentioned the possibility of Rich and his fired up barbecues, and I'm sold. Take my money.
Yeah, there we go. Well, it's not actually costing you anything, but yes, take everyone else's money. But I've just managed to pull my headphones out. One second, sorry. Something else to tell you about is we get all our news from Carpfeed. Carpfeed.com is the website. They're part of Bauer Media, part of the Angling Times group, and we are officially in partnership with them. We've had a chat with the guys down there, had a chat with Tom Ayres, who's responsible for the fantastic online content that they do, as well as in the magazine. It's now we're going to have an on the net section in association with Carpfeed, so it definitely has to be true because they've printed it. So yeah, how about that? I'm going to get a jingle made. It's on the net, so it has to be true because it's Carpfeed. We hope it's true. And something I have seen on Carpfeed this week, Mark, is
it's on the net in association with Carpfeed.com. So it's definitely true.
Did you notice Chris Yates's rod was back up for auction again?
I didn't notice that. No, what sort of? Is that the old? What was it, a Mark IV, whatever it was?
Yeah, it was a Mark IV Avon rod built by Dick Water. It's already been sold once. Dick Walker, sorry, yes. It's what Chris Yates used to land his iconic 51-pound 8-ounce. The fish that wasn't actually a record. It wasn't claimed because it was claimed. It wasn't accepted because it was spawn bound. It was rejected by the British Fish Committee back in the day. Which seems odd because
they're a picky bunch.
Yeah, although obviously many spawn bound fish have been claimed as the record since, but yeah, there we go. It was sold by Chris. I remember reading an article on why it was sold in the early days. I can't remember. But anyway, whoever bought it has put it up for auction again. It was a phone bid that won it. The guy was bidding from his best friend's wedding, and He was phone bidding for at a wedding. Yeah, that's, if it's something you really want, you're obviously a collector, aren't you, if you buy something like that. And then it's like, yeah, what day's the auction? There's a chance to get my hands on Chris Yates's Dick Walker rod. Oh shit, my best friend's getting married. Oh well, what do I do? So he found a way around it. He managed to bid on the phone, and it was expected to fetch between £4,000 and £6,000, and he got it for £8,280. So he obviously won it. There were two telephone bidders bidding against each other. Roger Sargent from Sussex. He was basically saying there's no way anyone else was getting their hands on this rod. To own a piece of carp fishing history like this is a dream come true. So yeah, have you ever collected anything? Have you ever had anything collectible from fishing?
Oh, collectible from fishing? Not really. But I think back to some of the old kit I used to use. Not just carp fishing, it was general fishing. I wish I'd still had it. Like my first Kinder Egg bobbins I made with my mum's hair clips.
Yeah.
And some line. And, you know, I used to have an old Tommy Pickering 13-foot waggler rod. Yeah. You know, I remember saving me fivers off my paper round for that. And, you know, I paid £100 back then for it. And, you know, that rod itself would be, I'd never sell it, but that'd probably be worth quite a bit now. No, I've never actually collected anything. The only real collection that I've ever had was monkey magazines under my bed until my mum found them. That was the end of my collecting days.
Well, if your missus finds your new stash, you might be getting divorced, which is apparently when Chris Yates sold his rod following his divorce. I'm guessing his missus cleaned him out and then he had to sell the rod. What a bit of carp fishing. I mean, is there anything more historic? You know, Dick Walker, former record holder of Clarissa, was it? The 44-pounder from Redmire, built the rod that Chris Yates then broke that record with, because Dick Walker counted the 51.5 as a record. I think everybody did the British Fish Record Committee.
What do they know? That fish was an iconic record.
Yeah, and Chris, before this auction, he did some promo for it, and he offered to take the winning bidder fishing. I believe Roger and Chris are going to meet up soon, so I don't know if he got a little cut of it. I don't know if he offered to do that. I don't really know, but it's very nice of him to do that if he was doing it for absolutely nothing.
Do you think he'll use that rod?
Apparently Roger has just bought a house with a lake, so he's going to make it he's going to get a presentation case made, and I presume he's going to display it there somehow. Pretty amazing. £8,000 for a nice cork-handled Dick Walker Avon Mark IV. Something Roger Bacon, a friend of the show, said to me the other day, actually. He's just had a new set of rods, some super tricky, like, mega casting things that he's bought for Grenville, and he had cork handles put on them, and he did say it's a sign of getting older and you want cork handles on your rods. It is a sort of old-time classic thing, a bit of a cult thing really now.
A cult, so it's something that, yeah, anyway.
The occult.
What rods has he got?
For years he's used the Nash one, same as mine, which are by far the sort of best all-round rod I've ever used. So Roger's a big caster and super tippy, which were the Nash NRXDs, which is what I'm still using, but he wanted some new 13-foot absolute chucking things, so I forget what he's got, but what are the ones everybody buys these days? Are they Free Spirit somethings, are they? Can't remember what they were. I know he's waited since the fishing show to have them built. He ordered them at the last NAS, which was last April, was it? And he just got them a couple of weeks ago, so I don't know why it took so long to have these built. It's proper specialist jobbies.
Hope we see him in the bank. I don't mind having a look at those, although I'm more than happy with the air curves. I was smashing very big solid bags 100 yards this week, and hitting the clip hard as well, so
yeah,
so I'm just showing off my casting prowess.
Something else I've seen on the net.
It's on the net in association with carpfeed.com. So it's definitely true.
Is the Fosters of Birmingham got sold. Did you see that?
I did see it, yes.
Yeah, and because I assume it's all in the public domain, because I can't see why you would ever advertise the entire figures of the business, but I presume it's because it was up for sale. It's been bought by Angling Direct. There's a few things to talk about here. First of all, they printed their turnover and profits. I'm assuming that's because it was being sold. So they made it's 17,000 square feet, Fosters of Birmingham. Now, Fosters obviously have been around for a long, long time.
Yeah, that's a big shop.
It's a big shop. They turned over 6 million or 5.9 million in the year, in the last tax year up to March 31st, 2017. As you know, as people who have a business will know, the fiscal year runs from April to April. 17,000 square metres, it made a pre-tax profit of £460,000 on that 5.9 million, which is what, net profit of just less than 10%? Net assets of 1.1 million. And half of those assets are the shop, valued at 500k, the actual shop itself. So, there's a couple of things to turn about here. That surprised me that a fishing shop is turning over 6 million nicker. I mean, I have absolutely no idea. This is just something I saw that figure and I thought, that's a lot of money. I presume most of that's mail order. I know they have a massive shop. You know, it's an old converted unit, isn't it, by the look of it? Or not an old, but a converted unit, you know, them sort of metal units you see on industrial estates and stuff. 6 million seems like a hell of a lot of business. Half a million a month.
Yeah, it is. I'm not privy to any figures, but yeah, it does seem a lot. But all I can say is they must be absolutely smashing it up on the internet, on the mail order side of things.
Yep. What's that? So 150k a week or something. Yeah, it's got to be a lot of mail order. And they hold £1.2 million worth of stock at any one time. Founded in 1978 by Richard Foster. This is what I love about Cartfeed, by the way. One of the reasons why we're happy to join up with Tom and the gang there is they just have all the info on everything. I noticed that last capture of the home fen fish, the Captain Jack, within 8 hours of the information of the news story breaking, they've been caught. Remember, it was caught at British record and then not claimed. Within 8 hours, they had an article up there with the absolute facts, figures, history of that lake, you know, owners, weights that the fish were stocked at, all the story behind it. And I was so impressed by that that I contacted Tom and said, look, we already plagiarised your news stories, can we do something official? And the same is here. It's just got the history of everything. You know, Foster's founded in 1978 by Richard Foster, who is going to continue to work for the business part time. Which is a smart move, I think, by the people that have bought it, because it's obviously Richard Foster is one of the reasons why it's so successful. They've even got a quote from the Foster family. We're delighted that in Angling Direct PLC, we found a buyer who really appreciates the staff business and understands how to operate it going forward. It's important that we found the correct buyers, and he sees the best possible future for both business and, more importantly, the staff. And there's a quote from Angling Direct as well. Now, obviously the figures did surprise me a little bit. I don't know, it doesn't say the price that it has been bought for. I presume that's private information. What do you think about these big companies? There's a bit of a trend at the minute. You work for one of the said companies, Fishing Republic, that I'm told it's now gone through. They seem to be buying up lots of shops, as do Angling Direct. There seems to be these two companies going for the monopoly on fishing shops in the UK. I presume that's for buying power so that they can get the prices down from the manufacturers. I don't know, have you got an opinion on that, Mark?
I don't know. You know, I've seen a lot of a lot of people slating the two companies you've just mentioned, mainly because it's you know, people who they've got their own little corner shop, but when their own little corner shop, it doesn't have the buying power of the likes of Fishing Republic, and you can get you know, the more power, buying power, the you know, savings get passed on, and if, also if these big shops like all the Fishing Republics are. You can get everything under one roof. And it was the other week I called in a new Huntingdon shop, Republic, and you know, only a couple of miles up from Monk's, I needed something, so I just thought I'd pop in and have a nose. It's a new shop as well, and it's just everything's there. There's a big, you know, obviously Cordis, Shimano, ESP, Nash, Fox, then your Match brands as well, you know, tons of bait, and I think it's good for the customer.
It's certainly good for the customer. Yeah, I know there's been issues with you know, the sort of discounting and the price matching and stuff that's gone on for years.
That's saving anything. That's just the competition, and the competition makes it good for the customer to get the better deal. That's all that is.
Yeah, well, does it make it good for the customer? And this is one of my concerns. I mean, maybe it's a bit rose-tinted glasses, but I mean, one of the reasons why I became, or one of the people that helped me become as addicted to fishing as I got, and was a guy called Steve Jones, who ran a little tackle shop in, I think it was in Wilmslow, Steve Jones's Tackle. It was a cracking shop. He taught me how to pre-bait. You know, I used to go in there and ask questions. You know, it was a guy that was passionate about fishing. Your local shop, I think, is important, especially for young, impressionable kids like I was, to go in, have a chat with people. And I think it's important that every town has its local fishing shop. And then what's happening is these big superstores and the mail order are kind of shutting those big shops down. Is it good? Is it good for the longevity of fishing, you know, encouraging kids in? Or they just getting encouraged by other means now, the likes of Carl and Alex and videos and YouTube and everything? Does it matter that the local shops are going? I mean, it's nice to walk in and have a look at the equipment, but there's only a few shops big enough to actually do that. You know, you've got the likes of Carp Scene and obviously the Fishing Republics and clearly Foster's, you know, Eric's, the big shops where you can go in and see all the different bivvies or bed chairs. Or if you're buying big stuff, you want to have a look at it, really, don't you?
Yeah, definitely. We've had a bit of a change around at work, and we've now got space to put a few bivvies up. But you mentioned, like, the corner shops teaching you. That's, you know, it's exactly the same in the larger shops. I mean, I'll just take where I work as an example. You know, Fishing Republic store, Doncaster. You've got, you've got me in there.
Hmm.
You know, I like to think I can actually dish out some useful advice every now and then.
Yeah, if they want to know how to catch bream, you're the man.
Knob.
That was something else I saw on the net, actually. Well, just quickly hijack it. Yeah, record bream, 22 pound. Do you see that?
I did see that. Do you know where it was from?
I don't know, and I remember reading the article and thinking I'd like to know.
Yeah, I read the article. It didn't actually name the place, but it was a Northwest 90-acre mere. Does it sound familiar?
That was the bit that intrigued me, the 90-acre Northwest mere, yeah.
Sounds like somewhere you once fished.
Tatton Park? Coal mere?
Coal. Which, however, you were telling me, had history for very few, but the odd monstrous bream in the past.
Is it definitely coal mere?
I ain't got a clue where it is, but that's just what it put two and two together and probably got 17, but that's just what it sounded like.
I think it did hold the bream record years ago, but yeah, I'm not sure. Yeah, interested to know that. Yeah, but yeah, carrying on about the shops. The problem is obviously your shop is great, but with these companies buying all the other shops up and obviously shutting down a lot of the smaller shops that just can't compete anymore, the thing is there won't be a shop in every town. It'll just be big towns. And that's the problem. And then obviously, you know, one big shop in a big town, you're not really going to have a chance to talk to everybody.
Well, I'm just going to butt in again because, you know, I'll just take Doncaster for an example because it's what I know. You've got a big Fishing Republic, and I can also think of four other small shops which are still in existence and have been for a long time.
Mm.
So they're not shutting down the mall. I mean, yes, they are taking the lion's share of the business because of it. That's what they can do. But there is there's still niches out there, and there's little specialist small match shops and carp shops and stuff. They're still there. It's not like Angling Direct and Fishing Republic are just smashing everyone and creating the monopoly. They're taking a lot of the business, but not all.
Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, obviously things are just changing. Fishing is big business in the UK, and obviously things evolve. Just looking at a picture of that Tarka, actually the big common from the Avenue. It's a right chunk of a fish. Obviously the biggest common in the UK. The guy had a 46 with it as well, making a brace of £110, which is almost certainly the biggest brace in the UK, and it's just. It says in the article, again, on Carp Feed, that it's the heaviest recorded weight and now the biggest living common in Britain, beating the 63-pound 4-ounce capture of the Lee Jackson common from Strawberry Fields in Kent. I didn't know that Strawberry Fields had done a 63-pound 4-ounce common, did you?
I didn't know it was big enough for a 63-pound common to even turn around in that lake. You've seen pictures of it.
I have, yeah. It's about 1 acre, isn't it?
It's about the size of a bath.
Yeah, I'm sure it's 1 acre. I remember the controversy when Laney fished it while they were stocking it, basically years ago, and they were legally buying big imported fish, dropping them in, and Laney was catching them to try and win the
some
carp angler of the year. Yeah, it was a 10K competition, wasn't it? Was it him and Lee Collins? It was head to head every week. It was a Carp Talk competition. Sure, it was 10K for the win. It was 5K or 10K. I think it was 10K. And obviously, it was the time that around the time that Chile was just getting Echo off the ground, and obviously one of his closest pals, Laney, was fishing Strawberry Fields at the time, which was, I think they were dropping these fish in weekly pretty much at the time while they were stocking it. I believe they were all legal, but even so, I don't think Chile was too chuffed at the time. Well, I know he wasn't for a fact.
Speaking of Chile, have you seen his little video? He's been out and caught a fish.
I have, yes.
Now that was, if anything wants to make you feel good, just go to Ian Chilcott's Carp Angler page on Facebook and watch his little video. It's we know what he's gone through, we don't need to go over it. He's had an operation on his brain tumour, and he's been out for a few hours on his local. He's caught a fish, a little mid-double common, and I don't think you've ever seen a man so happy to catch a fish.
No, certainly not. Yep, shout out to Chilly, former guest of the Carpcast. Got back and listened to that one. I can't remember what episode it was, but yeah, he's been around a long, long time, has Chilly.
Yeah, I enjoyed that chat and recording the extra bits with Chilly. He's such a nice fella, and just watching that video, I can't claim to knowing that well, other than just, say hello and have a quick chat at shows and what have you, but top bloke, and wish you all the best on your continued recovery, although it does seem like you're doing really well. Keep going.
Yeah, and going back to the Avenue, there were two mid-50 commons caught that week as well. I'm just looking at pictures of them now. They look pretty nice fish. One chap's had, it's his fourth UK 50-pounder in just over a year, so it just shows the stock in that Avenue. It's fairly incredible. As I said, it's not a normal lake. It's a as Rob admits with that lake, that is a lake where that's it's dug specifically and kept perfectly to grow fish as large as he possibly can in there, while people are fishing for him. But he has a 2-month close season. Was it 3 months? I don't know, it's a long time anyway. It might be 2 months. I forget, I'll have to go back to listen to the Rob Hales episode. But, if you want to go and catch big fish, that is certainly the place. Moving on, Mark. Do we have anything else on the net?
I don't know. I've been lax again and we have zero planner. We're just winging it.
Well, something else you told me that you'd seen on the net earlier was the transfer merry-go-round.
Oh, yeah, I've seen a couple of movements, if anyone's interested in that sort of thing. I've seen Mark Bartlett of Fox Favours now with Dynamite Baits, since we plug in their stuff.
Yes, Mark is somebody I'd dearly like on as a guest. He's on my list of people right in front of me, and I'm going to email Rob Hughes directly afterwards to hook me up with Mark's number. But yeah, I think he'd make a fantastic guest. I'm really interested in speaking to people that we had Kev Hewitt, didn't we? Were people that fish that kind of style, you know, the regular feeding. Bombing constantly. There's a lot to be. I've got a lot of questions for people like that, you know, as to obviously secrets in what you're spomming out. We discussed briefly while I was in Slovenia and Croatia and stuff, if it's the noise of the dinner bell, if it's the food in the food up and down in the column of water that turns them on. I don't know what it is, but there's a few guys that seem to have that tactic down to a T, and Mark Bartlett's one of them. But they're some of the most productive anglers ever, you know, taking that match fishing into carp fishing. So yeah, we will get Mark as soon as we can.
Yeah, I'd like to hear that. And yeah, if you're doing that, just really pick his brain and delve into every aspect of his fishing, from his baiting, what he's baiting to his rigs, and how often does he actually meet casties at rigs. Just bits and bobs like that, you know, I'm interested to find out. And also this spotting on fish, attracting them. One thing does it work in shallow water as well as deep? We know it works in deep water 100%, but you know, shallow water maybe 6 foot or less, yeah, it still is effective.
It did for me in 8 foot. So yeah, there's a rattling coming from your mic. I don't know if you're knocking something or typing while you're doing this, but
I was just scratching myself.
you were shaking the mic or the table or something. It was just
I was scratching vigorously.
I don't wish to know where you were scratching. So yes, well, no more information. Yeah, and Oz Holness as well gone to Sticky. I noticed that.
Yeah, I think that's a good move on both parts. Sticky's you know, cracking bait company, one of the best, well, probably the best selling bait in the shop I work in, at least the krill and the manila. And Oz Holness, you know, is brilliant angler and also knows a hell of a lot about bait, so best of luck to both of them. Nice guy Oz as well. He let me borrow at your Northern Angling show, otherwise I'd have struggled.
And former guest, you interviewed him as well, didn't you?
Oh yes, that was, you know, like when I spoke to Scott Lloyd, catching the Bergfield Common must have something to do with your storytelling abilities, because I barely said three words on both of those interviews combined.
Yes.
People just waxing lyrically about that lake, and I know you're talking about Rob Hale's big commons, but wow.
Yep, that's a corker. One I would dearly love to catch. Not sure if I'll ever get the chance now. Something else on the net.
It's on the net in association with carpfeed.com, so it's definitely true.
I won't go too deeply into, because you know, we don't want to be negative, but it made me laugh. Corda or Ali Hamidi of Corda released a short video on the back of his boat promoting a new floss caps, Mark.
I've seen it, yes.
Yes, so little plastic caps that basically when you blob if you tie baits on, you thread them onto the floss before you would normally just burn the floss. I never burn floss. I don't like the idea. The bait's going soft, and then I think they can just come off really easy. If you've only got, like, the only thing holding the boilie on is a burnt bit of, you know, basically like a melted plasticky end bit. I don't know. I just never like the idea. I always tie it.
Yeah. You know what, I've been doing the burn and blob thing for a good number of years now, and I've never had a problem, even when fishing at range.
Really? Yeah, I've never done it. So the basic idea between these caps, I mean, they're all in nice colours. There's six different colours, I think, and you basically thread that on before you burn it, and then it burns it down up to the cap, and just makes it more secure, a bit more resistant to pests, maybe. Which is, you know, important if there's a lot of small fish in a lake. But I'm not promoting the product. I've no idea if it's any good or not. I mean, one of the first comments in it was pretty much the first thing you said to me. You know, another bit of fishing tackle to solve a problem that we didn't know we had. which, you know, the quarter of business, and they're trying to promote things. I know you were taking the mickey out of the the new Nash Path. Yeah, which again, you know, it does seem a little bit tarty, but I actually had a practical use for a path while I was in Slovenia. Drew and I were fishing and in torrential rain. We did 4 days on a lake we're calling Bear Lake that we're running trips to in Slovenia. We were catching a lot of fish. The rain was driving solid for 4 days. We had our big sort of square Nash gazebo thing. I forget what they're going to call it now, but it's part of the Bank Life range that they're doing. It's a best bit of kit I'd ever had, especially for that type of fishing. And then we'd set up my Titan to the side, and we were doing all the cooking and stuff in there. We had two chairs in there, so you could sit in there while you were cooking and stuff. Both of us could chill in there. And then the ground between the two needed a Nash Path. There's no two ways about it. If you spend multiple days in rain on certain types of lakes, you know, whether it be clay or whatever, they're worth their weight in gold. So as much as you might laugh and think, do we actually need a Nash Path down to your rods or down to your cooking bivvy or whatever, there are certainly situations where you will. And I think there's a percentage of people that will laugh at it and going, why would you ever pay some money for something like that? And there'll be a certain amount of people that go, I could have really done with one in that situation. And then I'm pretty sure that it's the same with these frost caps. It's the same sort of thing. But my point is not about the product. My point is about some of the comments underneath, which I found pretty funny. And I was in that sort of flippant mood today where I wanted to reply under. It must have been 8 different comments I wanted to troll, basically, to put stuff under.
Don't lower yourself. I think you need to develop a filter and just ignore some of the internet muppets.
Yeah, but
it winds you up.
It wasn't winding me up. It was making me laugh, and I wanted to troll them as an absolute piss take, as opposed to, you know, this is something that's winding me up, and I just want to argue with people. It wasn't like that at all. It was more. I'm just going to see if I can find some of them now. I might do some live trolling. I'm really tempted to do it, because just some dumb comments, you know. I mean, one thing the internet does do is make me feel clever, because some of the comments that people put on stuff. Oh yeah, no, here it is. First comment, Christine, fixing a problem that doesn't exist. I mean, I'm all for a bit of comedy, because that's literally the first thing that you said to me as well, you know, solving the problem. But I mean, that's business, you know. We're in the market of manufacturers are in the market of you know, selling people stuff, you know. That's the game. If you can sucker people in with a clever name or a nice bright product or whatever it is, then that's your job. Surely that's the one. There was a free sample with Carpology last month, apparently, as well. But it can make, you know, it's a little coloured stopper on the back of the bait again. But I want to find some of these comments that were really. And there's obviously some trolley comments in there as well, you know, to people tagging people and going, game changer, boy. Because obviously it's clearly not a game changer, you know, it's just a tiny little bit of coloured plastic that's going to go on the back of your bait. Now, we do know that that does entice carp. Sometimes, you know, how many times have you used little coloured bits of fake corn, you know, little caps, as it were, on the back of oilies?
Are you going to be buying some?
No, I'm not, but I don't blob baits anyway. It's, you know, 2 overhand knots, 3 overhand knots on the back of it anyway.
I tell you what, though, I can't really see it with this product, but there is several things in the past that have been brought out. I've looked at them. Oh, is your delivery here?
No, it's the missus coming in from work. So
all right.
Dog goes, yeah. He just nearly garrotted himself with the cable of the headphone lead.
I was saying there's several products that have come out. I've looked at them and just thought, oh, a waste of time that is. And now I actually use them regular.
Go on.
So, yeah, the one. I'll tell you one is the corder cutter. You know that thing that chops boilers in half?
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw those and just thought, well, I don't really, that's just a waste of time. And there's someone's like, makes boilies twice as good and whatever. And now I actually think they're, especially if you're fishing down a slope, you know, stop your boilies rolling to the bottom, and then you've got a hook bait halfway up fishing on its own.
Yeah, there's a lot to be said for cutting boilies in half. Yeah, I agree. I mean, I was, I think it was the interview I did with Sean Harrison, and we know he's an old school carper, and we know he's an extremely good thinking angler. And I think while I was chatting to him at one point, he was sat there chopping a bucket of baits in half. And I said to him, you know, why are you doing that, basically? And then I can't remember if it was on the interview or not, but he basically made me think I should be doing it. He literally always cuts them in half. Obviously, it doubles the appearance of the bait in the swim without actually doubling the food, so you're going to fill them up less quickly. It stops them rolling on slopes and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it releases another more flavour, more surface area.
Yeah. More another thing also, if you're using a spom, because you know when the spom opens, you've just got a blob of bait that just sinks down, and you've got a very small patch on the bottom. I dare say with half baits fluttering down, you're going to get a little bit more of a spread over deeper water as well.
100%, yep, it's going to spread. It's going to spread a bit more. And one of the comments, some guy says, love the old school comments, if it ain't broke, don't, you know, etc, etc. Guy writing that comment on Facebook while using an iPhone at a lake, using 4G, charging their phone from a Ridge Monkey charger. Yeah, you're proper old school. It's, you know, guys talking about using bits of grass on as hair stops and stuff like that. But these sort of posts, they just entertain my day a little bit, just because of
it's not quite fishing related, but this entertained me. You know, Spug, Mike Redfern, he'd shared a post, something to do with the local village where he lives, and some vegan lentil muncher has done a load of chalk writing on the floor. And it's appeared on a local Facebook group of his, and everyone's like, you know, slating off, it's graffiti, blah, blah. But about two or three comments down, someone's put, if you weren't supposed to be eating animals, why are they made of food?
Yeah.
I just tickled me. And I'm sure some of the vegans, because they've got not got much of a sense of humour, vegans, when you get talking to them, have they? They like to tell you all about how righteous they are. And it's like, no, go away, I'm eating bacon.
How do you know when you meet a vegan?
They tell you.
Every time. It's normally the first thing that comes out of the mouth. Here's one comment. It might help keep the bait on longer, but being yellow, it's going to attract the birds and keep them coming back. Yep, because nobody's ever fished with corn. Nobody's ever topped baits with yellow corn. I mean, yeah, you've got a point there, pal. Yeah. Oh, disastrous. Lots of people thinking it's an April the 1st, April Fool's joke.
Yeah, I wonder how many more likes Sally's got to his page with all the attention it's got.
I don't know, there's just so many. One guy put, some folk would buy air in a can. I really wanted to troll that one, because I guarantee that Trevor Hadley also buys air in a can. I remember watching a documentary about the drinks company when they first found out that they could carbonate drinks, and people would buy them, which is essentially buying air in a can, because they realised they only need half the amount of bloody content in a can, because they can fill the rest with air, and people actually preferred it to buying still drinks. So I'm pretty sure Trevor Hadley actually does buy air in a can. I just wanted to give it to everybody. Have you ever drunk a can of Coke, Trevor, or Fanta, or anything similar? Because you are dumb enough to buy air in a can. the drinks companies could not believe it when. In fact, I'll tell you what it was. It was How Stuff Works. You know the podcast.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I've not listened to that one for a while.
Yeah, well, they did one on carbonation on soft drinks. And basically it was like, it was the best thing that ever happened to the soft drinks industry. It was carbonation of drinks. What's it called? How Stuff Works or something? Stuff You Should Know, that's right. Yeah, the big one is called, worth a look, definitely one of my favourite podcasts out there. all random subjects that are just super interesting when you go, they go through the history of them. But yeah, the drinks companies knew fell over backwards. They discovered this method of putting air in a can, putting much less product, maybe even close to half, and people preferred it to buying the old one. In fact, to the point of they would pay a little bit more for it. If you own a business and you can sell air in a can, why wouldn't you?
Would it be nice to have been in that business and around about that time? You'd have been laughing.
Yeah, there we go. Anyway, shall we move on to a guest?
Yeah, let's do it.
I'd like to welcome a chap that I met many years ago now. I'm going to make us both feel old here, but this guy seems to have been around the circuit for many, many, many years. He started off in Darrenth in the early days. He was recommended to me by one of my good friends, or one of our good mutual friends, Roger Bacon, as the guy that will always catch the fish wherever he goes. If there's a big one, he'll catch it. So I'd like to welcome Mr. Leon Bartrop to the Carpcast. How you doing, pal?
Yeah, I'm good. Good to be here, mate. Bloody hell, that must be 25 years ago, isn't it? But
The Darrenth days were. Yeah, how long ago was that? So that was that. Was that the first sort of circuit water you ever fished? Would you say, or were you?
Probably the first proper circuit water, and I was scared to death fishing it.
Really?
For the first season, I fished one swim near the car park, so because I just didn't want to go into any of the other swims and upset anyone or anything like that. It was really, it was scary stuff, really. Going from Club Lakes and a few other lakes, going to, like, Darrenth, the carp mecca, one of the carp meccas at the time, you know.
Yeah.
And there were some really good anglers on there at the time. There really was.
So this is the early Darrenth. Darrenth become infamous after that, really. There was it changed, didn't it? Was it new owners or something, or yeah, something was, happened?
There was new owners, and they, I believe from memory, they may have stocked some fish, and back then days you didn't really know about stocking fish and not stocking fish, and I think a lot of the originals died. There's still a couple left, and it's just grown on to what it is today, I suppose. You know, it's still an active syndicate,
right,
as far as I'm aware.
So let's wind back a little bit further. You said you were fishing the Club Lake, sort of what got into you the fishing, when was that first carp, or the carp buzz, when did that first appear?
Well, I was a match angler, first of all. I used to fish like nationals and junior nationals, and just a pleasure angler, catching tench and bream. And it was my great uncle who got me into it. I went to see him down in Devon or something, and there's no one in my family fished, no one at all. And he gave me a split cane rod, an old Mitchell, whatever it was, Prince, I think it was Prince Reel, and a little wicker seat box. And then all I did was pester my grandfather to take me fishing, and he used to take me over Holler Ponds in Stratford, you know, in Wanstead Boating Lake, and sit there with me. And it just, I just did that for about 5, 6, 7 years, and I went to a little lake, caught a 5-pounder. All I saw was this sucking of the underneath the lilies, and I had a sandwich, and I put a little bit of the sandwich on top of the lilies, and these massive, great big lips come up, and that was it. I caught my first one at 5-pound, and I was hooked, all over, all finished.
Yeah.
30 years later, well, 40 years later, it's always, that's it, it's been my life, really.
It's surprising how often I hear that story. It's exactly the same story as mine, same thing, catching it was floating cat biscuits, but on a floater, in amongst the pads, a 5-pounder, and that it just eclipses all other fish, doesn't it?
I thought it was like a monster, it was massive. Mm. You know, no one looking mad, nothing like that. A lady in the net, on the gravel, and bouncing around, and bad, bad fish care. But at the time,
everybody did.
This is a record. It's 5-pound. It's massive. You know.
Yeah.
And that was it. And then I started using luncheon meat, floats with luncheon meat underneath and catching more 5-pounders. And then you sort of go, right, where can I go and catch a bigger one?
Yeah. So where were you living in Essex at the time? Or where were you based?
Yes. Yeah, I was based in East London, near Ilford. I was based there. I was going to a little club lake in Noak Hill, which belonged to the angling club, junior section of the angling club that I belonged to. And, you know, it just sort of evolved from there, really. And then I met a few guys over Hainault Lake.
Yeah.
That was the first sort of lake just before Darrenfe, and a place called Boreham as well, which was Cheltenham Angling Society. We used to go to Hainault and fish there, and I had not a clue what I was doing. And, you know, SS6 rods or whatever they were, and Mitchell matches, and all that little 50-inch, well, it must be about 30-inch umbrella, a little food and bed chair, using cat food with curry powder.
Yeah.
And I think it was Bait 78, went up to there, and it was like the Mecca. It was like, oh my God, what's this? Black Magic, I think it was called, this bait, and used that, and had my very first 20-pounder. I caught a couple of doubles out there, and I caught a 23-pound, 6-ounce, and it's a park lake, so I don't know if you've ever seen it, and I'm playing this fish for about 30 minutes, and there must have been 100 people behind me. it was a park lake, middle of summer, midday, and it was just the craziest thing in the world. All these people started clapping. It was like, it just blew my mind, really. So I stayed on there for a few years, and actually had my gear nicked over there many years ago. But my mum used to drop me off. I used to walk, or I used to catch the bus, and that's when I fished with people like Terry Dempsey.
Yeah.
You know, people like that over there. Kim from, and Del from Delkim.
Yeah.
You know, you had all the guys that were anybody before they became anybody fishing over there at the time. You know, there's some great guys on there. And I think there was a 40-pounder in there even then.
Really? What year would that have been?
Oh, bloody hell. 80-something, that would have been.
Yeah.
Early 80s, I would have thought.
Wow, that was a big fish, yeah. We didn't see a 40-pounder in the north till a few years ago, I don't think. You know, yeah. you had them in the 80s. That's crazy.
I never actually even see it. I let alone catch it. I was very green underneath the gills. That was the only fish I ever caught out there. It was at 23-pounder, I think.
Yeah.
Of any size. But it just spurred me on even more. Started fishing Walthamstow a little bit as well. Day trips. And I met a guy who really changed my fishing unbelievably. Probably the older guys who listen to this may have heard of him, called Danny Regan, his name was. And he just took me under his wing, showed me rigs and leads and bait and everything. And then that was it. You know, he just helped me immensely in the fishing.
It's amazing that, isn't it, how there's one person that's kind of influential, and, you know, from you transitioning from a kid, you know, they obviously spot something as a keen angler and take you under their wing. Ooh. And I always try to reply to messages from kids now, because sometimes it's that one person that inspires them or makes them go out there and do it. And we all had that person, I think, you know, that we met.
That's interesting what you're saying about replying to every message. I get lots and lots of messages through all different social media, and I reply to every single one of them. And it's amazing the people that you get come back and go, oh, you actually replied to me. You've actually, oh, thank you so much. Thank you so much for replying. Thank you for taking the time. When it's like, hang on a minute, you took the time to ask me a question. I'm taking the time to answer it. And I think that's where a lot of big companies and big high-profile anglers just don't do it.
Yeah, with the exception being Julian Cundiff, I would say.
Yes,
who's probably been responsible for a lot of anglers, including a few anglers that are in the, you know, in the public scene these days. You know, I know Ali Hamidi used to write to Julian when he was a young kid. You know, yeah. It means so much, doesn't it?
Of course it does. You know,
it can be a bit weird in the modern age. You know, people are a lot more conscious of predators and, you know, like weirdos in that. I mean, I remember that there was this young lad used to come down and see me on St. Ives, and he stood there in the rain for 2 hours while I moved swim, got set up. He just watched everything, and it was pissing it down. I mean, it was really wet, and he didn't really say much. He was just watching, but I could see he was really interested, and he watched me get my marker float out, three rods, get all sorted. Anyway, when the rain eased a bit, I said hello to him and that, and he was telling me he lives local and he's really keen angler, and he mentioned his dad was a copper. Anyway, the following week, I went through my shed, filled a bucket full of just surplus stuff, you know, hooks, rigs, leads, everything. Just filled this bucket up, loads of gear in there there was, but just stuff that I wasn't going to use again, people had given me. Anyway, I give it to him. He come down the next week, and I gave it to him, and I never saw him again. And it did cross my mind that he's took this bucket of gear, probably a few hundred quid's worth of gear, maybe, if you added it up, took it to his dad. His dad's a copper, and gone, oh, yeah, you've met some stranger down the lake who's given you a few hundred quid's worth of gear. You ain't going back there again. I never saw him again.
It's a really weird sport. It's not weird, but it's so good in so many ways and so bad in so many ways as well. But everyone's so into it. Some people just—it's their life, isn't it?
It does get you like that. That feeling you had. I mean, we're very quick to put down the instant carpers. But if that 5-pounder you had under the pads was the first fish you ever caught, you'd have been a carper straight away because you know it. There's something about it, isn't it? It grabs you as soon as you do it. So. I think you're a better angler for knowing how to float fish, quiver, tip, you know, trot a float down the river. I think you're definitely a better all-round angler, which is going to help you in carp fishing. But I don't blame people for just getting into carp anymore.
Well, the thing is also is I believe that me taking up that sport at that time, it saved my life, really, because the area I lived in and half the people I know now, they're either banged up for 30 years or they're dead.
Yeah.
You know, the kids I used to hang about with was, you know, there's nothing to do. You'd either become a robber or a copper. One of the two. As simple as that.
It's interesting, you know. Again, our mutual friend Roger Bacon, he says exactly the same thing. You know, growing up in Withenshaw, it was pretty rough there, a lot of crime and gangs, and especially in Manchester in those days. And same thing, fishing saved him 100%.
Yeah, and, 100%, definitely. And it's become my life and my living, and I've met some such good guys, and it's... You know, it's my mother always used to say to me, "Cool, you never do anything with fishing. What are you doing fishing for? What are you doing that?" And it's that's half the reason that I've sort of done what I've done in my life with fishing.
It's motivated, yeah.
Motivation.
I never used to think there was any money in it, unless you're a manufacturer. But there's an. You know, if you're going to be a manufacturer, yes, you're doing it in something you're interested in, like fishing, but generally you're still working in a factory or, you know, product development design. It could be anything. Same if you own a fishing shop, just to work in the fishing industry, it's still retail, you're still stocking shelves and ordering, and, you know, it's tough. But there's like a new breed of ways, revenue streams in not just fishing, but because of the internet now, and that's content creation.
Yeah.
Which is basically, like you do, I've noticed you've started doing the vlogs. Can you earn money from that? Is it, like, how's that working?
Yeah, well, the thing is, this is the how fishing has changed. Now, to me, you go back 5-10 years ago, you could earn money out of fishing being for want of a better word, consultant. You get paid for going fishing or promoting stuff and everything else. Now, I would say these big companies, they don't need consultants.
No.
There is no such thing as a consultant anymore. You know, there's people who work for the company, and now people who want to get into fishing and earn a living, they're just not going to do it unless they bring something else to the table. Yeah. They're good at videography. They're good at taking the photograph. They're good at social media. They're good at sales. They're good at, you know, designing products. You know, the least thing that companies want now is actually catching fish.
Yeah.
You know, it's got nothing to do with the fishing industry anymore. It really hasn't.
Yeah, it's as you said, you need to have another string to your bow, because what I know is, I think Corder were the first to do it, that the people they were promoting and kind of making famous using on the TV programmes were the people that actually worked full time for them, so that they were careful about employing people. I mean, this is how I see it. Danny might tell me different, but you know, it looked like rather than having sponsored anglers, that they had employees and they made them the you know, the high profile. Anglers is probably a better word. And
I think Calder have always been ahead of the game of everything like that. You know, they really have. That's why they are probably the biggest fishing tackle company still, and always will be, because they've always been ahead of the game with that type of thing. They've always been innovating.
This is not a Corder discussion, but yeah, I mean, you've hit the nail on the head there. The marketing is brilliant, for whatever reason, Danny, Ali, you know, the few things. But you would people think they're the biggest because they've got TV programs, but if you actually add up their turnover per year, it's probably a fraction of Fox and Nash, because they sell stuff that's a fiver, a tenner, you know, not 400 quid, 500 quid an item. So their turnover is probably a fraction, but you're right, people think they're the biggest company there is, and that's because of they were very forward thinking with the videos, with the, you know, that they've been technologically quite advanced, I think, from before anybody else, I would say.
Yeah.
Especially with the TV programs and you know, that's obviously been a big, you know, a really big thing for him. But yeah, we have Danny on the show. He's been on a couple of times, and he's happy to be a regular guest. So yeah, I've never really gotten too much into the business side of it with him. But I mean, you must have seen it change during all the years you've been fishing.
Definitely, it's all changed. It really has. And you know, there are, what's changed, I think, is that. You've got the demise of magazines. Now, there's got to be a reason why the demise of magazines. Now, to me, because I work in the industry, is that customers don't want to be sold to in a certain way anymore. They don't want to open up a magazine and go, look, there's X and he's saying this is the best rod you should use. They get it now. They understand that, hang on a minute, he's selling to me.
Yeah.
He's selling to me. You know, it's as simple as that. And they don't want to be sold to anymore. They really don't. There's so much information on the internet, so many people out there who are giving unbiased views. That's what I do on my blogs and my how-tos and my reviews and everything else. And I don't think any of the big companies have actually switched on to that at all yet. They still think in what I call analogue instead of thinking in digital. So, because their profits aren't getting affected at the moment. But they will do. The next 5 years, you watch. It'll be totally swinging around.
We've seen a big switch in the magazine game, not just in fishing, but generally,
and everything.
You know, we lost a couple of big magazines last year, didn't we? With was it Advanced Carp and
Well, you've only got to go back probably 7 years. There was a top men's magazine. I can't remember what it was. And you think, bloody hell, they must be making money over hand over fist, and they closed down because the readership weren't there. Look at newspapers, The Sun and all them. They just don't sell. Don't sell anymore. They really don't.
It's digital. The internet has brought this age of people not wanting to pay for things. And there's so much good stuff on the internet. And there are ways of monetizing that. I mean,
there's lots of ways of monetizing it. But I mean, just going back to that for a minute, I think it all changed when we had that first recession about 10 years ago. People thought, right, what can I cut back on? Magazines, buying newspapers, buying that, XXX. So when it got good again, 3 or 4 or 5 years down the line, it's like, actually, I haven't missed that. I haven't missed that magazine. I can get it all online. So I think that's the start of the end, I think.
Yeah, I mean, the companies that have moved with the times that have really good sort of online content. I mean, our news section is sponsored by Cartfeed at the minute, cartfeed.com. It's fantastic. We were going to them for our news every week anyway, because they're just so on the ball. And why would you ever go out and buy a paper?
Would you?
No, because it's all there. And again, you hit the nail on the head with it's delivering it in the right way, so people don't see it as an advert. I mean, it has been happening the last few years with the companies stopped doing catalogues, and they started doing like a product video instead, where it's kind of informational. You know, Nash did it with the Urban Banks or Eurobanks or whatever, and yes, they're advertising the Nash gear, but it was quite entertaining to watch. You know, Ollie and Alan go fishing on Lake Lead, and it seems to be a lot of people have moved that way now. And I don't know. I mean, when did you start doing your vlogs then?
About a year ago. But I've, you know, I monetize other things in different ways, and I actually, probably a lot of people don't realize in the fishing industry, is that I've got my own business doing media and things like that for non-fishing companies as well as fishing companies.
Right.
And I do like videos, videography, and, you know, social media for Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, for just as many non-fishing companies that I do for fishing companies.
Yeah.
And it really has changed the way everything's perceived. You know, there are a lot of ways out there that someone like myself can make a revenue stream without having to go to the fishing companies.
Yeah.
You can make money off the back of them.
Yeah.
In different ways. There's something like affiliate marketing, things like that. You know, there's lots of ways. YouTube, you know, you can earn a little bit of money from YouTube, but it's all the other add-ons and other things and bits and pieces going on. So I've got my own clothing that I sell, you know, which keeps things ticking over.
Is that the Black Chicken?
Black Chicken. Plus, I've released a load of different designs and bits and pieces, and people love it. You know, they get. I thought, nah, that won't do well. That won't do okay. And it's just people like being part of that community.
Yeah.
You know, we've got a close Facebook group. They love the YouTube videos. They want to be part of that community without being sold to.
What do you notice in the YouTube videos? Like, which ones get the most watches and stuff? I'm having a look now, and, you know, all of your videos have got sort of 5K plus. Some of them have got 15K. Is there a pattern to which ones people really respond to?
The ones that people really like, who get the most views and the most comments and likes and feedback and shares and whatever, is the vlogs, is just the normal fishing. Normal me going out with the dog, fishing wherever I'm fishing, whether it be Welly or Sandhurst or the Quarry Lake, where just normal fishing, not like, you must buy this.
Yeah.
It's like, well, this one works for me, but you can use Calder's as well. You know, this is a Gardner product, but Calder do one, Nash do a bag the same, or...
Yeah,
and they really appreciate that I'm not selling to them. And you won't believe the amount of messages I get saying, it's so refreshing to see someone not selling to me. Just, it's real fishing.
Yeah, for the people listening to this won't be able to see, but we're on video chat here, and I can see the Black Chicken t-shirt there. You've got it, hashtag Black Chicken. It's a picture of probably one of the most dreaded things in angling, which is the coot. Coots and tufties are not fun.
Well, people can associate with that, can't they? It's a bit of fun. You know, people who order a t-shirt or a hoodie or whatever it may be, and it's like, oh yeah, my 5-year-old wants one now. Or I get people sending me images through Facebook saying, look, there's my 2-year-old, he's just stuck to the telly listening to you.
Yeah.
And all that, and it's like, buzzes the life out of me.
Yeah. So when did you first realise that you wanted a part of the industry? Like, was it after fishing Darrenth, or was there an opportunity that came your way?
I think it was actually the very, very first opportunity I got, because I was catching a few fish, and that's what it was all about back then.
Yeah.
Was actually given to me by Dave Levy.
Yeah.
And was actually given to me by Nash.
Yeah.
Which was free bait. Oh my God, free bait? Jesus. And bits of tackle at cheaper price, and oh mate, I loved it. And that was it. It was really, you know, it was really good.
Shout out to Dave Levy, because he did exactly the same thing for me. He gave me the first break. I think Armalead would give me some bits, some leads and stuff before that, but yeah, Dave interviewed me for a magazine, took me down to Nash to meet him, and got me set up, not on free bait, but you know, got me set up on the cheaper bait and stuff. It was a big deal then, you know.
Well, Carl, it was a massive deal, and the thing was, it's like, and they probably won't like me for telling you this, is that I was actually living and engaged to his sister at the time.
I remember.
So it was, Dave, you've got to sort me out.
You
know?
You were fishing. Were you fishing in Essex Manor then, or where did you meet him?
I was fishing in Essex Manor. We were fishing other places and that, but I remember him ringing me up one day going, I've just seen the Annie on the bank at £44 or something, or it's mental, so I had to get myself a ticket. And at the time, I lived 2 miles from the house, from the lake. I lived actually 2 miles. I could have catapulted a boilie from my house to the lake.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so I suppose I sort of really made my name on there, really, catching the Annie and a few of the others, and then moved on to Horton and other places after that.
Yeah, well, I mean, Horton's always been kind of a fame maker type of lake, hasn't it? There's a lot of people cut their teeth on there and became well known, and never more so now, I think. They're like, the stock in there seems to be ridiculous. In fact, Dave Levy's just made his name again.
Yeah.
He's been out of the limelight for a few years, hasn't he? And he's had chunks, hasn't he, this year?
Yeah, I mean, it's changed since I fished it. When I fished it, it was like, you probably had 6 or 7 full timers on there.
Yeah.
So, and I mean proper full timers like Shelley and Sharpie. You know, you had them all on there. Jerry Hammond was on there. Everyone. Terry Owen was fishing it. Everyone. Nick Elliott. It was like, bloody hell, how am I going to catch one?
Yeah. But you did.
And the funny thing was, my first bite was the one that I really wanted, which was their wood carving.
Yeah.
And that was caught on a 50mm bait, 5-0, 50mm bait, something totally different, on a 3-inch hook lick and a 5-ounce lead.
Would you say you've always done things a little bit differently, tried to, you know, like that? I mean, who would think of casting a 50mm hook bait out these days? Like,
well, it was underarm swing, really. You know?
Yeah.
I'd spoken to a guy who you've probably come across as well, John Miller.
Yeah.
And he was fishing Sutton at the time on the RMC ticket. And he said, try them big baits, boy. Try them.
Yeah.
So I thought, in for a penny, in for a pound. I've got to do something different. I can't compete with time, full-time job.
Yeah.
So I just did something different and just stuck with it. And boom, I had a few of the originals out doing that.
Really? You had others on the 50
mils? Yeah, I had Fantail. I had a couple of the Commons, or you know, all the original Commons, more or less, just on the 50 mil baits, mental stuff.
Did anyone see what you were doing and copy? Or?
No, it was very sneaky. It was very sneaky. The only person who knew what I was doing was Miller, John Miller. He knew what I was doing.
Yeah. Has that happened before, since? Have you ever had something that's either way ahead of the time, or just something that's been a massive edge that's different to everyone else, and you've managed to keep it quiet?
What I do when I go out to the lake, the very first thing is that, it's not your rig, it's not your bait, it's not anything else, it's your eyes. That's it. That's the best thing in carp fishing.
Yeah.
Is watching and looking and listening and not divvying up and all that sort of stuff. But the second thing I do is I watch what everyone else is doing.
Yeah.
I watch what everyone else is doing, I do the opposite.
Yeah.
So if everyone's using 5-ounce leads, I use a 1-ounce lead. If everyone's casting 120 yards, I fish 10 yards. If everyone's putting loads of bait in, I fish singles.
And
that's the best advice I can give, apart from your eyes, ears, watching and looking and listening, is to just do the opposite. It's like I'm fishing welly at the moment and relatively successful on there, and I'm using double baits instead of single baits. Everyone's using pop-ups, I'm using double bottom baits.
I'm exactly the same. I'm sort of nodding my head at everything. I know you sort of had many technical chats with Roger, as I have, and you know, the people in kind of the inner circles of circuit waters, you know, I'm a little bit out of that now, but I was right in there, and it's exactly the same thing. Literally, the swim that nobody fishes, that's where the big one lives, you know.
I love the corners, you know, I love the corners of a lake, I really do, because no one wants to fish them.
Yeah.
The biggest one from the car park, and the smallest swim where you can't get a bivvy.
used to be the same. I even remember reading the Christchurch articles years ago, which was obviously a super pressured day ticket lake, sort of a long time ago. And the Ian Poole days and stuff, and Petals was in there, but I always remember Ian Poole writing it was the little swims, the little stalking swims up the end and stuff that you couldn't really bivvy up in. Yeah, that's where we'd catch them close in and stuff. And did you ever catch Petals?
No, I did. I only had a few trips up there. I did manage to catch a couple, But I just, I don't know, for some reason, I just didn't fish it a lot. I just didn't. So many stone acres, I fished there a little bit. Loved it. Absolutely one of the best lakes I've ever fished at Stone Acres. Because you use a bow and it's just real carp fishing. Yeah. But I couldn't take the old carp dog with me, so I couldn't justify paying the money for it.
Yeah,
I couldn't fish it.
It'd have probably got chased off by that cat as well. There's an angry cat on there.
Bloody hell, yeah.
Yeah, it comes to you dead friendly in the car park, and every now and again, we just got bite through when you're stroking it. It's, I don't know if it's playing or what, but it hurts. But yeah, I remember your little carp dog. I saw him on there, Sandhurst, a few years ago. We were down there with Lewis.
He's still the same, as mad as anything, barks at everyone, sleeps all the time.
Yeah,
and, yeah. People love him. You know, I get people messaging me, "When are you going to do a clothing range for the dog?"
And all really,
mad stuff. You know, but people, a lot of anglers have got dogs, haven't they? They've got carp dogs, and they can associate with that. And I think why my YouTube channel and that's been successful is that it's just normal fishing, like a normal guy who's been around a while, knows a thing or two, and saying, "Look, well, this is what I use." What you're actually showing us? You all open and. You know, well, the cooler leg core's better than the Gardner one, or whatever. Oh, bloody hell, right, okay, I'll get some of that. And it's not, because I'm not associated with anyone, I work for different fishing companies, but I'm not a consultant or a sponsored angler, or I don't have to deliver that part of my fishing to anyone.
Mm.
Which is refreshing for the last 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, I mean, you obviously have done in the past.
Yeah, and, I've sold my soul, as they say. You know.
Yeah, I mean, I've always said with every company I've ever been with is the only thing I don't want is pressure on my fishing. I don't want the enjoyment to be took out of it. I don't want to feel like I have to go and catch some fish, or I've got to put fish in the magazine. You know, I haven't sent a picture to a magazine in years, and I mean years, you know. Mm. It's a long, long time. And again, it's less relevant now to have those articles because, you know, you're probably getting more people watching your video logs than you are... would ever see you in that magazine, so
it's also like you say, I get 15,000 views on a video or something, but what I don't understand is that you don't get there's a couple of exceptions, but you don't get someone go, "Blimey, look what he's doing, let's see if he wants to try this line out or this reel," or, you know, some of the other bloggers out there who aren't well known, who get good numbers, no one gets approached, if you know what I mean, to say, like, bloody hell, the industry's not that switched on yet, like in other industries.
Yeah, it's, you look at like Carl and Alex, Carl and Alex obviously don't use a sort of, you know, probably one of the biggest success stories in the UK on there. But the foreign angler has been doing this for a long time, haven't they? They've been blogging this sort of stuff for ages, and it's good. I mean, you know, I've got a few other hobbies, and technology is pretty forward in those. You know, the reason I started a podcast is because, you know, it's very common, and there was nothing in fishing, and it was very common in other genres, and you know, and it's. I don't listen to anything. I don't put normal TV on anymore. You know, I get my content from YouTube, from Twitch, which is like a gaming platform, and podcasts on the phone, because it's specialised. It's what you're into. Mm.
Of course. And I think where my company's been successful is that it's the fishing industry is so far behind. They just don't get all this. They really don't understand it. They really don't get the power of social media and actually interacting with the customer. It's more for a fishing company, it's more interacting with the shop.
Yeah.
And it's the other businesses I deal with, which are non-fishing, they're so switched on about social media and photography and everything else.
Yeah.
That it's refreshing. It really is.
Yeah, I think people are getting onto it now, certainly the bigger companies, because they've had to. I had this conversation with Kevin Nash 3 or 4 months ago. He took on 3 guys for an absolute fortune that are literally just producing content videos, you know,
that's their job.
And years ago, when, you know, Facebook first came out, it was just like, all right, somebody in the office, you, it's your job now. Yeah. You know, somebody's got no skill, doesn't understand it.
Well, it wasn't even that, was it? It was like, right, he catches a few fish, I'll let him run the Facebook page.
Yeah.
And I think there's still a lot of that around.
Yeah.
There really is, like, oh yeah, one of our, he runs a Facebook page. And no disrespect to most of those guys, but they haven't got a clue what they're doing.
No, you can do a degree in social media now. It's important, and it's not by accident that some people are good at it. You know, it's a skilled job. So
yeah,
and like I say, the big companies.
It's a job. It's a proper job.
Yeah, well, that's it. I mean, it used to be, oh, you can update the Facebook page, but it's a full time. You try doing it for your own business, and I know. As you do, you know, I've done it for my business. It takes up all your day. Like, it's a full-time job in itself.
It is, yep.
And then, obviously, understanding the algorithms, what's worked, what gets the best interaction, using the data, knowing how to analyse it. There's a reason why there's a degree now in social media.
And the thing is, with social media and that type of thing, is that it's forever changing. I mean, I'm part of different mentoring groups in America. I speak to guys who've got massive businesses out there who are in this, you know, I pay to actually be in these groups to be up to date with what's happening with Facebook, because we're about 6 months behind in England to what's happening in America. So I want to know how I've got to help these businesses who pay me in the next 6 months. What's going to change? It's like probably most people in the UK don't realise that come February of next year, Facebook, you're going to be able to monetize your videos on Facebook.
Right.
So just like YouTube.
Yeah.
You know, but people in America have already got this, some of them.
I wondered when that was going to happen. Yeah, because YouTube have been so far ahead on the... people are giving up other platforms just to produce videos on YouTube, because I think when you're in the... You know, these companies that are getting like 500,000, or, you know, the big vloggers, the tech guys and stuff, are getting 500,000 views per video. Well, what's that worth? You're getting 500,000 views every video.
It depends where they're getting viewed. There's something called a CPM, which is... it's actually how much each individual country, the advertisers there, pay... And you share the monetization with YouTube. So YouTube get paid, you get paid.
Yeah.
But there's two tiers of YouTube. Basically, there's like the creators, which is like everyone who puts a video up. And then there's the advertisers. So what happens a lot, and why a lot of these big YouTubers get 1 million, 2 million, 3 million, they've got their advertising linked in.
Yeah.
So when you look at one of their videos, you watch the very first advert in the beginning.
Yeah,
it'll be linked. It's like someone called Casey Neistat, really good YouTuber, you know, 7 million subscribers. He'd be talking about the new Samsung phone, and the first advert you get before you even watch the thing is a Samsung phone.
Yeah,
and it's all linked in, and that's no accident.
Yeah,
and YouTube, because they're getting paid, they push it out even further.
Do you think we'll ever see a fishing YouTube millionaire?
I wouldn't say millionaire, not just yet, but. Something I've noticed, and something which Angling Direct and Fishing Republic, who are taking over every single shop imaginable, you're starting to see their adverts on YouTube on fishing.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're ahead of the game a little bit when it comes to things like that.
Yeah, we've just done it with the Northern Angling Show. We've set up, but we've got a media company this year. I mean, I didn't know that this was your game full time.
Not a lot of people do, you see. I've kept it that way purposely.
So, yeah.
No one knows what I really do, because I try to go about my business. Some of it's fishing, most of it is non-fishing.
Yeah. Well, we've got a company doing all the stuff for us, and I mean, you can see how much money's in it. The owner, they're called Mustard Media. They're big in the sort of club, you know, festivals, that industry is where we know them from. But when the guy pulls up for a meeting in an Audi R8 and the number plate's Mustard, it's just like, this ain't going to be cheap. but they're good, you know, they're good, and it's important, all this stuff. And the thing is with fishing, for most people, it's romanticism. It's you know, it's an idyllic, tranquil, peaceful surrounding, and you know, it's like
it's,
I say,
it's from normal life, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And I think people become upset when when it turns into a business, you know, you see the hate that Corder get because they're really good at what they do, you know, they're really good at the marketing, and, you know, they have to have broad shoulders, because I'm sure they don't mind when the money comes in. But I think for anglers, this mix of technology, marketing, business, you know, the fact that there are millionaires in fishing now, or certainly company owners, the bigger ones. And I don't know, it kind of goes against that going fishing with your dad on the river.
Well, if you believe the statistics, the through sales of licenses and things like that, there's less and less people coming into fishing.
Yeah.
Less and less. Every year there's less and less people.
Yeah. Or more people not buying licenses.
there's been
a trend being flippant. But yeah, no, it is. And what do you think we can do against that? Surely this, you know, obviously the young kids are brought up with technology now. They're on YouTube and Twitch and the gaming sites from the off now. You know, us old kids have had to adapt to it. But this is standard for them. You know, they've never known not having a mini computer in their hand with their phone.
No, exactly.
They've never known it any different. So, things like this, vlogs, things, you know, this content on YouTube and stuff, you'd think that would be helping kids get into it.
The problem is, there's thousands of gaming channels out there, millions of them, and gamers, and Xbox, and this game, and that game, and how to ride your tricycle better, and all the stuff kids love.
Yeah.
There's hardly any YouTube fishing channels. There's none. There's probably 40 or 50 or 100, which is a drop in the ocean compared to everything else.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it does take a lot of time and effort to actually put a video out, and consistently put a video out. It's a lot of effort.
So if you were in charge of bringing youth into fishing in the UK, you work for the Angling Trust or whatever, what would you do?
Blimey, that's a very difficult but very good question. I would, you've got to look at where the younger generation are.
Mm.
Which is not as much Facebook, more YouTube, more Twitch, more Instagram, more, you know, something called Kick, which is another sort of messaging app and things like that, is to get yourself in there. But that's a full-time job and that's lots of money. So you're stuck in between a hard place, aren't you?
What about, like you said, it kind of saved you from the streets. Is there something you can do at that level, you know, with local clubs, with schools?
Well, I don't think there is many local clubs anymore. There used to be loads in my area, loads of fishing clubs, which used to have a junior section, then you'd have, and the older guys would help the juniors, and you'd be all lot match competitions and that. There is no match scene in the south of England anymore. It just isn't there. It's all up north. And if you're just looking like Angling Times and things like that, it's just, there is, the match section results getting smaller and smaller and smaller.
I mean, we have a show up north and you wouldn't believe the problem we have getting the match companies there.
Mm.
Like, if you say fishing's backwards compared to most industries, match fishing is in the dark ages compared to carp fishing. Oh.
100%.
You know, they're not on the, you know, there's not many match anglers doing vlogs. It's frustrating, you know, with the show. Even companies as big as Dyer and stuff, they just don't get it.
That's the problem with a lot of the bigger companies. They just don't get stuff. Now, if you look at, it's called social media for a reason.
Yeah.
Not just media. No one thinks about the social. It's called social media. I don't see any of the big companies answering any questions on YouTube.
Yeah.
Any comments, any anything. And they're just doing themselves a disservice. They're ruining their brand.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, it's not how I thought this conversation would go, getting into the nuts and bolts of fishing. So.
But it's a shame for the young guys, because the ones that do get into it, they love it, so they're into it. They're really into it.
Yeah.
It's not just a fleeting thing. It's like, that's it. That's what I'm doing for the rest of my life. How do I get a job in it? Where do I catch the next big fish? They're into it so much, more than their Xbox or whatever.
Yeah. I think what's happened as well is carp fishing's took over. the sort of entry level fishing, the little small ponds, catching a perch on a float, the sort of things that move us on to the next fishing. There's less of that now, isn't there?
Lakes
are worth so much money if they're full of carp now.
It's just commercial fisheries, isn't it? All the time. I speak to a guy who used to fish for England, Metz Fishing, I used to fish with. Who's had match fishing companies in the past, some of the biggest ones in Europe, and he says there's just no one does trotting a waggler down the Thames anymore. One does. It's just all pole fishing on commercials full of little carp. That is it. There is no one feeder fishing anymore. There is no one stick float fishing or waggler fishing. They just don't do it.
Yeah, it's an endurance test to match fishing these days. It's like sheer volume of how quickly you can drag them in, as opposed to, you know, like two fish would win a section sometimes. You're working for 4 hours to nick a couple of bites. And that's how it was when I did a bit of match fishing, fished the police matches and stuff when I was a junior. But now, as you said, there's just hundreds of these little C1s or whatever they're called now, just the £1 to £3 carp, and thousands of them in a lake.
It's a shame, because that's just one of the problems, I think, where the youngsters aren't coming in to the sport. I think the only youngsters that are coming into the sport is through their father fishing, or, you know, their uncle taking them, or, you know, their friend at school's dad's taking them, so they go along as well. Oh, I like this. Oh, this is actually different. And you'd be surprised how many young kids are actually, once they go once, they really enjoy it, and it keeps them out of trouble.
Yeah. So is that the answer? You know, approach schools. I'm sure the Angling Trust are thinking about this, you know.
But the thing is, it takes a lot of money, doesn't it? And the money's just not there.
Yeah.
You know, you could say, right, let's go to every single junior school, talk to them about fishing, and find a local lake where we take them all for a trip. Like they go to the London Dungeon, or they go to the Natural History Museum. Let's take them to a lake for the day.
Mm.
One, you've got to find that lake in their area, which there's lack of lakes for a start, and with little fish in them, because they're all commercials.
Yeah.
And it's just, you've got to have special certificates to actually take these people. It's just a lot of money and a lot of time and a lot of effort, where they can just go, right, let's go to the Natural History Museum, we've booked that, that's it, lovely.
Yeah.
Too much effort and money and everything else involved, and paperwork.
This is a conversation for another day, I think, but you've got me thinking about what we can do, you know, as people in the industry. You know, I've got a show that has 15,000 people attending this year. You know, what can we do to make people go, to encourage kids? I mean, we already do like free for under 12s and stuff.
Yeah.
But there's got to be
an idea would be, why don't you have a little pool there with small stuff in it, and go to the schools and say, look, come along. We have people there teaching you how to catch these fish and that type of thing. But it's going to be a drop in the ocean, because who else is going to continue doing that? It just doesn't happen, which is such a shame.
What you'd need is a lake that you could give to the youth. So Danny Fairbrass has been buying up all these lakes for the MBO project. I mean, it maybe needs somebody with his sort of money, because obviously it's impossible for me to do, but somebody his sort of money to have a lake in each area, and it's there, schools each week, it's just, you apply for the week and it's yours for a day, you know, and the equipment's there, somebody brings the kids on, we'll put a guy on there. But
there must be something that, as a fishing community and the big companies, we can do. You know, they put enough effort into trying to win the World Cup at fishing, and, you know, all the different companies putting their anglers in and everything else. Well, why don't we do something for the young'uns, because that's their future business anyway.
Yeah. So what personal fishing wise, what does the future hold for you? You're still on Welly, are you?
I'm doing a little bit on Welly and Country Park. I've fished Sandhurst a lot in the winter. I tend to move about a lot. Every couple of years I'll get three new tickets somewhere and fish there, and I fished up in Peterborough last year a bit. A place called The Folly, lovely lake, you know, old scaly fish. And
That's just done a 50, isn't it?
52, I believe, yeah.
Really?
Fish called The Pig. But there's it's more difficult to find lakes where you can actually be left alone a little bit to do your thing. Just the nature of fishing, less and less lakes and more keen anglers, you know, of the older generation.
Yeah. It's when your time on Welly, was it kind of where the Ronnie rig first came round? Were you on that bandwagon at the start of it?
The Ronnie rig. I've cast the Ronnie rig out once, reeled it back in after 20 minutes because I hate it. But
really?
The thing is, if the truth be known, it's like a lot of these rigs, the Ronnie rig actually, that isn't the original Ronnie rig.
Yeah.
Now, I know the guy, Ronnie, himself, and it doesn't bear any resemblance to what is being used.
Go on, tell us the rig. It's tied on, isn't it, with braid or something? Are the two bits tied together?
It's the real Ronnie rig is basically, which again I've never used, it's like a long shank hook, really, with a very long piece of nylon, which just acts like a very long D. Simple as that. That's what it is. A bit like, you could say, the swimmer rig from years ago, they used to use a Savé and things like that. It sort of resembles that, and it's tied on with a bit of braid as well. It's not what the Roddy rig is that everyone uses. It's totally different.
Have you got any affiliation?
It's a bit like the KD rig.
Yeah.
That was invented by someone totally different, and it's totally different to that as well.
So it's not just like it always looks messy to me, though. There's just the hair coming straight off the top of the eye.
Yeah, I mean it resembles it slightly, but it wasn't invented by KD. I'm not going to say his name, but it wasn't invented by him at all. He actually was shown it by the person who actually invented the original
and nicked it.
And the actual real KD rig uses amnesia and braid,
right?
And it's about 12 to 18 inches long, and it uses very small hooks, which aren't the curved shank like that for a start.
Have you always paid a lot of attention to rigs? Have you been a riggy person, would you say?
Yeah, I think rigs really matter. In certain situations, when like the Ronnie rig is used a lot on particular waters at the moment, using something different after fish get used to it, because they will get smashed on a new rig, like a chod rig, you know, really popular rig, really done well, you can cast it out anywhere, and then suddenly, two or three years down the line, it stops working. Because the fish just get wised up to it. It will always catch fish. Every rig will always catch fish, because fish are hungry. But if you want to be consistent and catch more than anyone else, you've got to do something different than everyone else. That's what I think, anyway.
Yeah. So, like, have you ever come across a rig? Like I've had these chats with Roger, as I'm sure you have. Roger was very much a rig person, always thinking about problem solving as opposed to just trying to do something like amazing. He's just trying to do the right thing for that situation or bottom, or, you know, like fishing scenario, how the fish are feeding or whatever. So have you ever had like a massive edge, would you say, from a rig?
Yeah. There's one particular rig I caught late years of Horton, and everywhere I've sort of taken it and used it, I've sort of watched the fish. I'd put like pop up on from the tree and watch the fish come in, and they just suck it and blow it out. Choddy, bottom bay, you know, all them rigs. And then I'd put this rig on and it'd be like, oh my god, and you just nail everything that comes and even sucks at it. And it's a rig which is called the square rig,
right?
And I know some very good anglers that use it, and it's very I believe it's the same type of rig that Tom Banks uses.
I was gonna mention his name before, actually, when we were talking, because he has a rig, doesn't he, that he won't let anyone see, and somebody once told me he has to hand place it.
Yes, it is a rig you have to, I have cast it out and caught on Horton with it, but it is a rig for the margins.
Yeah.
As simple as that, because it's a rig where you look at it, you go, no way is that going to work, but it works. It really does work.
Go on, can you fill us in?
Well, if you can imagine a square, it's just, it is a square. The actual rig is a square, but only three sides.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's like a goalpost. It's like a, It's like a goalpost. If you follow the goalpost all the way around, the hook's on the end.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a long shank hook, and it's stiff material that you use, and you use sea fishing knots to make it into a square, and the bait is running along the long shank.
Yeah.
And it's only probably 5 inches long.
So what's the thinking behind it then? What's...
I don't know, it just works. It just works with a sort of half a bait, not a full bait, just a half a bait.
Yeah.
And it just, whatever angle, it's like a big spring.
Yeah.
So whatever angle they suck it up from, it goes in, and then whichever way they move or try and blow it out, it's not going to go out exactly the same way as what they...
Yeah.
Whatever happens, it's going out a different way.
So it just tricks them because they've never dealt with it before.
Totally tricks them.
Like a bit like the confidence rigs were used in the '80s and stuff. There was you know the elastic rigs, and it was doing something that they just didn't know how to deal with.
Exactly. And whereas like a handful of people use this rig, fish will never get used to it.
Yeah.
So it's, but I haven't used it for about 7 or 8 years.
Right.
It's just one of them. You go, yeah, that's a brilliant rig, but I want to fish out there. Mm. I haven't used it here because you don't need to use it because you're doing other things.
I've always wondered about that, you know. So you get a rig, like Roger has it, you get a rig that's, if I can't get a bite, I'll put this rig on. It's like the confidence rig or the... And I'm thinking, well, why don't you just put that rig on all the time?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a really good point. I don't know. That's maybe just the way us fishermen are, I suppose.
We want to make it hard for ourselves and then we can't catch.
I was actually speaking with another guy who's used this rig very successful. Probably... one of, if not the best angler I've ever seen, and caught everything from anywhere he's gone, and keeps a very low profile. But people in the know him, you know. And he's used the square rig a lot over the years on Savay and, you know, all over the place. And he says, oh, yeah, the square rig. Yeah, I must... That's the rig I said I'd never take off my off my thing, but I haven't used it for about 5 years.
Yeah.
It's exactly the same thing.
I do it every year. Every year I get the rig that I'm going to use for that year. I've tweaked stuff the year before. It started working towards the end. And then so the following year, it's all I use all year. And I'm really happy with it. And then I just change to something else for no real reason. And then I have another year thinking this is the rig. And then every few years I think, I'll just go back to what I used to use. And it all catches.
they all catch. It's, I believe, and I say this a lot on my vlogs and everywhere else, it's just all about confidence and what you're using. Doesn't matter what company's bait, doesn't matter what company's tackle you're using. If you're confident with putting out what you're putting out, you will catch.
Yeah.
Simple as that. Maybe not then, maybe not next time, but you will catch eventually because you've got 100% confidence in what you're doing. And that catches fish more than any rig or any super bait or whatever.
So if people want to find you, they want to find your YouTube channel, they want to book you for media.
If you just go to my website, leoncarper.com, or my YouTube channel, Leon Carper, Facebook, Instagram, it's all the same, Leon Bartrop Carper or Leon Carper.
Fantastic. I'm going to ask you a few questions
It wasn't me.
But for now, I'd like to say thank you, Leon, for joining us.
It's been a pleasure.
Listen to the Carpcast on iTunes and subscribe through the podcast app on your iPhone or iPad. For Android users, find us on the Stitcher Radio app. Go to Google Play and download Stitcher Radio for podcasts. Add us to your playlist and click listen to hear us anytime you like. Don't forget to enable offline listening if you wish to save your data on the bank. We're also available on the SoundCloud app under The Carpcast, or check our website at www.thecarpcast.com. Remember, listening through an app will recall where you were up to when you get that screamer, or you could always make a whip. The fish, of course. And now another guest with a quick fire five.
Straight point or beaked hook?
Straight.
Pop up or bottom bait?
Bottom.
Stick or bag? Or neither?
Stick, but very small.
Braid, mono or fluoro, both mainline and hook link?
Copolymer mainline, hook link combination.
And lead arrangement, inline, clip or helicopter, chod style?
Clip.
Quickfire 5.
And that was Sean Harrison from a few weeks ago with the Quickfire 5. We have been asking all our guests extra questions when they finish the interview, and we'll be playing them out on different episodes. So once again, thanks for Sean. If you didn't check out that interview, I would definitely recommend going back and listen to it, because it was fantastic. So a big thank you to Leon. Leon's been a long time friend of mine, first introduced to me by Roger Bacon many years ago. They've met each other on Darrenth, and my first meeting of Leon was on the Essex Manor in the middle of winter. I did a guest on there with Dave Levy, and he had his pants off when he came round. I think it was freezing cold, middle of winter, and they pulled a big Mooney to welcome us onto the lake. Yes, that was my first meetings with Leon. Yeah, but pretty sharp carper. He always seems to catch him. I remember when I first met Roger, and he told me about Leon, and he was like, Leon, he's just one of them that you know he's going to catch the fish wherever he fishes. Like, it doesn't matter how long it takes him. You know, I'm not saying that he's super wizard, you know, like he's just going to go on there and ace it in no time. It's not like that, but he says he will always catch it, the big one or whatever lake he's going to, and whether it takes him a long time, a short time, doesn't really matter. But if you had to bet on somebody that's going to end up with the fish, or the big ones, he will. So yeah, long time, and it seems to be doing a lot in the industry side of things. So yeah, shout out to Leon, thank you very much. Clearwater Business, as you know, Clearwater is an official sponsor of the Carpcast, have been all year. Alex has done a fantastic job down there. The Syndicate Lake, Keir Lake, is going to be closed very soon for the big knock through, and I'm very excited to see that. Alex has took on a great team of people around him, and one of the most recent ones has been Ben Hesketh, a friend of mine from Blackpool, who used to be bailiff. I met him, he was bailiff up at Four Seasons in Blackpool. The place that Alex also robbed the Decent Chef from there as well. He seems to surround himself with some really decent people up there. But yeah, Ben is obviously a fantastic photographer. He's in a few of the photography fishing groups that you might see on Facebook. He's done some really good stuff. Ollie Davis-esque, you know, they're basically have very similar skill set. Ben's up there working, doing different things. One of the things he's been doing is cataloguing the new fish, all the stock fish that Alex has put in. He spent, as I said, I think he spent, I'm sure I heard the figure, £180,000 that he spent on fish for both the day ticket and the Syndicate Lakes. Yeah, it's crazy. It had a pretty good stock in there already, and over the last year they've been moving those around. You know, splitting them between the different lakes. It's going to be Syndicate Lake and two really good carp fishing day ticket lakes up there. Plus they've got the cafe there. Well, a cafe is not really the right way to describe the fantastic food that's up there. But yeah, clearwaterfisheries.co.uk is the website. And I keep saying this, I haven't actually managed to do any fishing on there this year, but I'm at home this week and next week, so I'm going to get up there for a night. I've got a friend of mine, Sam Holt, wants to go fishing up there, so I said I'd take him up and introduce him to Alex.
Is that Sam who was on your what's it, videos, knowledge videos?
Yeah, Sam is one half.
I recognise the name.
Yeah, Sam is one half of Copywriter, a pretty well-known dance act. They play sort of house and soulful house, been signed to Defected for many years, released many classic songs over the years, yeah, in the sort of house music industry. Sam's pretty well-known. And he actually worked for Defected Records for many years himself. But yeah, he's moved back up north to Chorley, where he's originally from. And he gave me a message the other day asking about lakes and stuff. I said he needs to meet Alex, really. I'll probably get 24 hours up there with him either this week or next week. So yeah, I shall be up at Clearwater myself. And I want to get up there before it shuts in November as well, for them to dig the lakes through. So yeah, clearwaterfisheries.co.uk, they've got the Facebook group on there and everything, so go and check them out. VIP carp holidays as well, the Slovenia and Croatia and Lake Bled trips that we're doing, you can now actually book those. They are up on vipcarpholidays.com. The packages are up there. Reese hasn't completely finished the website as yet, so I'm working on it tonight with him. But yeah, you can definitely go up there. There's, I think we're going to take up to 8 anglers in any one given week. We're very flexible, can work around flights. And if you don't know the amazing fishing that Slovenia and Croatia has to offer, then you might have been living under a rock. But without doubt, it is almost the most spectacular place and up and coming place. The carp boom's going off around there. It's still a bit of exploring, adventuring. In fact, I was chatting to Steve Broad today. Steve Broad, spoiler alert, is going to be a guest possibly on next week's show. I'm recording with him next week. You put me onto him, Mark, this week, saying he'd, what a great storyteller he is. So I gave him a call this afternoon. And yeah, he's glad to be a guest. But he was saying that Dave Levy's on one of the Croatia lakes at the minute and actually caught the biggest fish today, 88 pounds. And the conversation, and Dave said exactly the same thing to Broadie today. He said, you would not believe it over here. He said this is one lake. This lake slightly has the biggest fish, but it only because it was stocked a year or two before the others. There's a dozen lakes exactly the same that are right behind this lake, you know, in terms of fish sizes. And that's what we're doing. We've got a lake in Croatia and 3 or 4 lakes in Slovenia. All got fish to mid-70s. They're all growing like maybe 4 or 5 kilos a year. You know, the average fish is growing, you know, 5 pounds a year. It's, and they're all very well stocked, and they're all just like natural, beautiful lakes. I cannot say enough good stuff about that. And yeah, and then Dave Levy, the former guest of Carpcast as well, was telling Brodie today exactly what I've been saying for weeks. Like that area, it's having a carp boom. The fish are huge. It's stunning. The climate's great, it's cheap, everything over there is fantastic, and it is the next place. You know, we had like the France boom years ago, this is the place. And VIP carp holidays will make it as easy as possible for you over there. You just need to bring, you get a flight in your suitcase, you just need your reels, your buzzers, you know, your hangers and stuff. And your tackle box, that's pretty much it. Maybe a few little bits like your head torch and obviously your camera, because you're going to catch a lot of fish. And we'll pick you up from the airport. We'll pick you up Ljubljana Airport or Zagreb Airport if you're fishing Croatia. And we will take you to the lakes. We'll get all your tickets. Well, tickets are included in the prices, actually, apart from Lake Bled, which you have to book yourself online. But yeah, we make everything extremely easy for you. Get over to vipcarpholidays.com and you will see all about it. And it's not too expensive either. The prices that we're charging, depending on what you do for a living, but certainly if you're a tradesman or whatever, maybe on 120 quid a day, our price is probably less than the 4 days you would lose work travelling to and from that part of the world. So it's not actually that expensive, and we do everything for you. We also got arrangements with the lakes. Make sure you're getting the decent swims. We know the decent swims on all the lakes, and a fantastic guide over there who's on last week's show, Gasper, who's a fantastic angler himself. You know, he's going to be pointing you in the right direction, as long as am I, because I'm going to be living over there. So yeah, check out vipcarpholidays.com, and a shout out to Dave Levy for catching an absolute chunk today, 88 pound, biggest fish in Croatia currently.
Have you actually seen it on the Ridge Monkey page? They've mentioned this fish that they believe he's caught, called Sumba, the biggest resident on his second day of a week trip, and it's all on film. So that's something to look forward to as well.
Shumba is the name of the lake. I don't know if the fish is called called Shumba as well, but yeah, Shumba is the actual.
Shumba's biggest resident.
No, I'm just looking on the Ridge Monkey page now. Shout out to the Ridge Monkey guys. We do like the lads down there.
You know, I got told at work the other day.
Yep.
I've got to buy the Ridge Monkey chopper that's in the shop.
What, the bucket?
Yeah, the bucket with the chopper in the top. I've got to buy it.
No way. I've got it.
I've got to buy it because I've put so much of my own bait through. It's kind of smells now, so.
Oh, you're right. You've been using it and they're making you buy it, yeah.
It's demonstration purposes only, obviously. Yeah, I've got to buy it. It now smells of monster crab.
Yes, I've got one. Can thoroughly recommend those. They do some decent gear, Ridge Monkey. Yes, and we've spoke at length about chop baits over the years, haven't we? So So yeah, there we go. That's pretty much it. Worth a look. I did go and have a look at the Nash Trade Show. I mentioned it on last week's show. I was on my way fishing to the epic session that we just had, and I absolutely loved all the new stuff that they've got. I really like the luggage. Have you seen any of the new luggage yet, Mark? It's got all like hard tops and bottoms on it, so basically like a bivvy table on top of all the things.
Yeah, I've seen the picture. I've not seen it in the flesh yet, but I've seen the pictures, and yeah, the first thing I thought was that's going to stack perfectly on a barra.
Exactly, yeah, it's been made with barras in mind, and obviously you know, to they do these little hard trays as well, a good sort of like rig trays. I don't know if like you, for the start of a session or during the session, for me, like my bucket lids get used a lot, and the stuff that you're using all the time, baiting needles, you know, or hair stops, like all like the little bits, they're just out all the time, and I'm constantly looking for, you know, I'm sat on my bed chair tying rigs, and I always lose stuff, like, you know, I'm making PVA sticks, you know, and I'm plunging them, and then I put the plunger down, and I'm looking around, and it's under the bed or in the sleeping bag, or like, it's at least half of my session is spent looking for the things that I use constantly, like, because you're just putting them around. We're only in a small little bivvy, so I like the idea of having like some sort of little table there. I mean, every time I see somebody else's bivvy table, that was an old school carper where you're taking, as you know, if you couldn't carry everything to your swim in one trip, you were taking too much gear. And you know, I see people making two barra trips to the swim these days. Shout out to Heapy Bob, because I know he's one of them. But I don't know. I would never take a bivvy table fishing, but yeah, I'm getting, I don't know if it's my age or the fact that fishing is a lot more comfortable than it was. But I like the idea of having bivvy tables kind of built into to your gear, and these little trays that they do as well now. That I'm sure, you know, 50% of carpers are just going to use a skinning up rolling trays. I'm pretty convinced of that, but yeah, a rig tray will do me good, and especially the little like they do a brew making bag as well. It's nice and small, it's got a hard top for obviously putting your cups and stuff on the top while you're doing it. They've done it so that it keeps your stove and gas bottle and everything, and you can actually leave your gas bottle inside, so it's like a warm sort of case for your gas bottle as well, and there's like a little hole in the side of it for your for the actual stove to come out, so you don't need to actually remove it from the bag. That's going to be such a good little seller, that is. I think something small little bag, you know, to keep your kettle, your brewing kit in, basically, with a hard top. Yeah, fantastic. I liked all the luggage. I like the bank life stuff. We were talking about comfort when you're fishing France and abroad and stuff like that. So, you know, Kevin, I know Kevin's been reluctant to release kind of like gear, tackle more geared towards, you know, holiday anglers and the way they fish abroad, where you can park behind a lot of swims and you take everything, including the kitchen sink. But they do have a bank life range now, including that big gazebo thingy that I used, absolutely loved abroad this year. So they've got a whole range of stuff there, from tables and everything. Clever little bivvy heater thing that I saw, that runs off tea lights. You put like six or seven little tea light candles in it, and it's like a double sort of it's like black metal, and in testing they raised the temperature of a bivvy 8 degrees by putting these little, and you know, you can, like IKEA and stuff, you can get a bag of 100 of these candles for pennies. I don't know if your missus has them all around the house, Mark, like mine does, but they have a lot of them. Yeah, and quite a handy little bivvy thing. Gives a nice glow in the bivvy. You can also put like mozzie candles in there and stuff, if you like. Yeah, just tons of stuff. I really liked all the new stuff, especially the clothing. Now, we mentioned the clothing last week because people were trolling the skinny jeans. But yeah, I really do like the clothing. One thing I will say, you were taking the mickey out of the bivvy mat last week, you know, the path, the Nash path.
Yeah.
And the price of it, I hadn't actually looked at any of the prices, but I did speak to Kevin last week, and something Nash do, that Nash have, like, you get the recommended retail price, and then you also get the SSP, which is the suggested price that Nash think you should sell it at,
which, yeah, is pretty much standard across the industry.
Yeah, so the but the thing is if you nobody ever sells at RRP, they sell at SSP. So it's kind of like, as you said, all companies doing, it's kind of so that the shop makes it look like they're selling something cheaper than the actual price. It's just a marketing technique by shops, basically. And all the companies do that, but the problem is it makes things look expensive, and then people slag off the manufacturer. So if the RRP on say the Nash Path is £65, but actually everybody sells them for £49, which seems like a reasonable price. I mean, I'm making those prices up, by the way. I don't know the prices, but it makes the shop look better and the manufacturer look bad. And Kevin made a very valid point last week of, because some of the clothing looks quite expensive. He said, but that's not the prices that the clothing's actually going to get sold for. But rather than the manufacturer take the flak for it, when everyone knows, you can just ring up one of the discounty type shops, you know, your Ericsson places like that, probably Foster's and probably Fishing Republic. But everyone knows that they're going to get it loads cheaper. So just what's the point of advertising RRP when nothing ever gets sold at that price? So I think Nash are going to start advertising the SSP, the suggested selling price, in future. I've seen comments on various posts of, blimey, I'm not paying that £160 for a jacket or whatever, you know. I've seen these types of comments, and I think you're going to see a change in the industry of people actually advertising prices a bit more realistic to what you can buy them for. You'll probably notice that in the shop at some point, Mark, I would guess. But yeah, there was a load of fantastic new products for this year, and I was really impressed with all of it, specifically the luggage and the clothing. The clothing looks really smart. I love that new camo design that they're doing, you know, the one with the lakes and stuff.
I've not seen that one yet.
I think they advertised it last year, but I think the new bed chairs that came out last year were in this new camo. But yeah, basically they've done a camo pattern, but if you look closely, the pattern's actually, I think it's either 7 or 9 really well-known lakes from around the world, and that's the pattern of the camo, and I think it actually tells you what they are on the inside. But I don't know if Lake Bled's one of them, actually. I think it might be, but yeah, they've made a camo pattern out of that. Pretty smart. That's it, we've waffled on enough this week, I think, Mark.
I think we have. I'm getting hungry, actually. It's 20 to 6, and well, I'm going to go for a run, which ain't going to take long because I just can't run very well. And then I'm going to eat.
I'm going to do exactly the same. So I think it's goodbye from us.
Goodbye.
Be seeing you.
That as well.
www.thecapcast.com. There you'll find extra content, merchandise, and lots more to support the show, including our entire back catalogue of free offerings.